Chapter 2 Luna City. The newcomers followed the flight crew through the long airlock hallway. A few turns, a ramp up, and a slope down. The long walk let them all practice their low-gravity strides and get a feel for the physics of the moon. Subliminal acclimatization, Callie's books called it. She fell into a quick, easy rhythm, measuring out each movement. The other new caretakers moved with cautious steps. A few swung their bags and studied the motion. The school kids gleefully jumped up to touch the ceiling. Callie couldn't help but notice the walls and ceiling were well padded and the lights all shielded beneath protective bubbles. How many arms and legs got broken in this hallway every year? No, not a hallway. They called them avenues up here, and boulevards for the bigger ones. The third sanitizer misted them with a tangy mix of antivirals, antibiotics, and anti-carcinogens. It was a bit of overkill. Even the children needed a battery of preventive shots to visit the moon. But Callie understood the emphasis on health. In the closed lunar systems, infections spread faster than rumors. The final hatch slid open, almost theatrically, and revealed Luna City. Like many frontier settlements, even the largest, fastest-growing ones, Luna City was a city in name only. The moon base barely qualified as a village. The main plaza could have been the center of a high-end shopping mall or the lobby of an expensive hotel. The flagstone plaza stretched 30 meters across, with 8 sloping walls leading up to the domed ceiling 3 stories above them. At the cardinal points of the plaza, 4 large arches led out into broad hallways, the boulevards. The arches stood 4 meters tall, easy, and their blocky, raw lunacrete design gave them a vaguely Mesoamerican feel. Callie had read the boulevard names during orientation and in a few of the colorful brochures pressed into her hands over the past few months, but had only paid enough attention to pass the required tests. Looming over it all was the Armstrong tree. The first tree planted on the moon, with roots that reached down into the lunar soil. The lower gravity let the oak's branches sprawl out, reaching across the plaza like a dome within the dome, breaking up the light with hundreds of shifting shadows. A few kids hopped, but even the lowest branches were too high, probably by design. The tree dominated the view, but plants grew everywhere Callie's eye happened to settle. A dozen tall ferns and bushes stretched up between the tree's roots, and others sat in large lunacrete planters around the plaza. She knew they were supposed to help with air quality, but it still seemed amazingly fresh inside the city. She'd expected the faint chemical hint of processing, but the air in Luna City was clean and alive. People in jumpsuits and coveralls wandered through the plaza and between businesses and apartments down each one of the boulevards. Off to her right from the airlock hall, sandwiched between 2 boulevard entrances, stood the tall facade of a hotel. Ivy crept up and over the structure, giving it an odd vibe, balanced between southern mansion and lost city that went well with the boulevard arches. The crowd of passengers spread out among the huge planters. Families headed for the hotel. Berenson and the chaperones tried to round up the bouncing 12-year-olds. A slim, green-haired woman who'd boarded the carrier with crutches walked off with them slung over her shoulder. Callie shifted the oversized duffel on her shoulder again. It had weighed almost 80 pounds when she climbed into the carrier back on Earth. Now it was so light she couldn't escape the feeling she'd left something behind. She sighed with relief at the idea, an actual weight off her shoulders, even as it gnawed at her mind. Kurt was a few meters in front of her. It was amazing how well he could swagger in 1/6 gravity. Near him was one of the other new caretakers from the flight, a blonde girl named Paige that Callie remembered from a spacesuit practice class. Paige's jumpsuit didn't fit right either, but in a much more flattering way. It helped that she'd unzipped it a bit. The blonde smirked at something Kurt whispered in her ear. There was a snort near Callie's elbow.
"Do you think he's telling her having sex with him in low gravity is the chance of a lifetime? He told me that twice on the elevator ride and then once just before we landed."
Callie glanced at the woman standing near her. The white trim of their jumpsuits matched.
"You were at the Osiris orientation," Callie said. "You're..."
Her brain just barely stopped her from saying Snaggletooth.
"Tessa," said the girl with a quick, sharp nod that made her bangs ripple. They stretched from ear to ear.
A large set of pince-nez eyeglasses gripped the bridge of her nose. She gave a small hop and went half a meter into the air.
"We were in some classes together, too. I remember you sat in the back and didn't talk to anyone. You're Callie, right?"
"Yeah."
"Did he try his line on you, too, the one about having sex with him? I'd think he would have asked you."
Callie nodded.
"About an hour before landing. He's very determined. You almost have to admire that."
"No, I don't."
A bronze-skinned woman with dark hair and a blue designer jumpsuit waved and joined the crowd of school children.
"Hey, kids," she said, her face splitting in a wide smile. "I'm Lana Gathol, and I'm the mayor of Luna City. Welcome to the moon."
She and Berenson led the field trip away. A white man with the blue patches of Lazarus base corralled two of the new caretakers, guiding them off down the broad street to the west. A woman with charcoal gray stripes and patches had already pulled the new Pluto recruits off to the side of the plaza. Half a dozen of them were left standing amidst the huge planters. Paige looked around.
"Now what?"
"I think that's a bar over there," said Kurt, gazing across the plaza. "We could all get a drink."
"I don't drink," said one of the other recruits.
"Neither do I," said Tessa.
Callie dropped her bag on the flagstones. It settled in slow motion.
"Has anyone seen any other caretakers yet?"
Nobody answered. A Latino man next to her spoke up.
"I thought there was supposed to be someone here for all of us, too."
Across the plaza, a steel-haired man with a few days' worth of stubble walked toward them. He moved with a slow lope, like a man used to skipping, but determined to keep his habit under control. The mayor had moved in the same way. Moon legs, someone had called it in orientation. As he approached, Callie could see a silver badge on his worn coveralls and an old taser pistol riding on his hip. He wore his tablet on an arm brace just above his left wrist. People kept trying to start up that style on Earth, but tabs were just a bit too heavy to be comfortable. Not an issue up here, though.
"You must be the last of our new caretakers,"
the steel-haired man said with a glance at his tab. Up close, Callie could see the star and crescent shape of his badge. He skimmed a few names off a list on the screen and gestured at his badge.
"Sam Gordon, I'm the sheriff. Should be one for Hades, three for Aaron, and two for Osiris, right?"
Tessa adjusted her shoulder strap.
"Is something wrong?"
Gordon shook his head.
"Nothing big. Your rides are running about 12 hours behind schedule, that's all."
"Why the delay?"
"Just some flat batteries. They had a convoy coming out here to pick you all up, and one of the buggies went dead. They're recharging at Osiris. Be here in the morning. There are rooms for you at the hotel."
"Excellent," said Kurt, grinning. Paige smirked. Gordon's lip twisted into something almost like a smile as he stared at the young man.
"You're the Hausman kid, aren't you?"
Kurt's expression faltered just for a second.
"Yeah, that's me."
The sheriff dipped his chin in a slow, thoughtful nod. His gray eyes never left Kurt's.
"I was told you were coming up here."
That confirmed what Callie had suspected. Kurt was one of those Hausmans. It explained a lot.
"I know you've all heard a lot of shit about life up here being one big party," Gordon said. "Let's be clear. It isn't. It's 300 people working under constant stress who can't get away from one another. So we all try to keep it casual and let a lot of stuff slide that folks frown at Earthside. Doesn't mean there aren't rules and common courtesy. So remember, most of the supply closets are bigger than the jail cells, and try not to think with your dick too much.
The sheriff waited a long moment for Kurt to nod before he continued.
Your rooms are reserved under your bases, and they comped you a couple of meals. Don't order the beef at the hotel restaurant. Welcome to Luna City.
They watched him lope away.
What a killjoy, muttered Kurt.
So, who wants to get that drink?
Callie sat on the hotel patio and picked at the scraps of her dinner. Imported chicken and locally grown green beans, a specialty of the hotel kitchen. They tasted just like all the other green beans she'd eaten in her life. Her book sat on the table next to her, but she hadn't even turned it on. For the past 20 minutes, she'd just watched people wander through the plaza like dancers on a stage. Most of them moved with the same slow, steady gait as Gordon, the practiced pace of lunar residents. A few moved in short hops, covering 1 or 2 meters at a time. A small group of school kids, defectors from the field trip, spent 10 minutes leaping up at the branches of the Armstrong tree before their teacher appeared and whisked them away. They all had their lives ahead of them. Callie's jumpsuit still scraped the inside of her thighs. She was pretty sure she had a rash by now. She let her hand slip under the table, pinched a few centimeters of nylon twill near her crotch, and tried to wrench it down her thigh.
"Pardon my intrusion," called a voice behind her, "but you wouldn't happen to be one of the new caretakers, would you?"
She sighed, glanced up, and tried to subtly move her fingers. The speaker, a husky man of 50 or so, sat at another table closer to the door. A bristle brush of red and white hair stretched across his scalp and cheeks like moss on a rock. His orange coverall was unzipped to show a Hawaiian shirt. A black utility vest hung off his shoulders. It may have been able to close across his stomach years ago, but those days were long gone.
"Yeah, can I help you?"
"Thought you were a new face," the man said with a broad smile. He stood up and approached her, holding his free hand out. "Russell Gilliman. Call me Russ."
She hesitated, then shook the hand.
"Callie Washington."
He held up his glass, and the liquid rocked back and forth in slow, hypnotic arcs. More magic of lunar gravity.
"May I buy you a welcome to the moon drink, Mrs. Washington?"
"Miss, no thanks."
"Really? I think a young woman like yourself would have had a dozen proposals by the age of 20.
She sighed.
"Look, Mr. Gilliman."
"Russ."
"Mr. Gilliman," she repeated. "I don't know what kind of person usually shows up on the moon, but I've got no interest in sleeping with you or anyone else, okay?"
There was an awkward silence as Gilliman took a slow, measured drink from his glass.
"I was just saying hello, Miss Washington."
She shifted in her chair.
"Sorry."
"And for the record, I like my women not quite so skinny."
"I'm sorry, really,"
she sighed.
"There was this pushy guy on my flight. He kind of left me on edge."
Gilliman gave a sage dip of his head.
"There's one in every lot, let me guess. He's going to sleep with every woman on the moon."
"Not the first, I'm guessing."
"Hardly," he snorted. "They all think it. Hell, I think I thought it when I first moved up here. Young, dumb, and full of cum, if you pardon my language."
"Sure, just this once."
"Then we'll forgive each other."
He eyed the patches and bright trim of her jumpsuit.
"I see you're going to be at Osiris."
His cheeks flinched back and forth as he said the words.
"Yeah, I applied last minute, and they were the only ones who still had an opening."
"It's a fine base," said Gilliman. "Good people. Wagid's a sharp man. I've been out there half a dozen times."
"You're a caretaker?
Even as she asked, she wondered if picking up the book would end the conversation. Would he take the hint?
Allah, no,
he shook his head. It made his drink sway again, crawling up and down the sides of the glass in slow-motion waves.
No, couldn't take the responsibility. And I hate death. Prospector. Some minerals and rarities here and there, but mostly ice at the poles.
Ice, she said, lifting the book. Really? Another sage nod.
The city pays 10 euros per liter for whatever you bring in. Still cheaper than having Discorp send it up the elevator.
Curiosity got the better of her.
Can you actually make a living like that? I didn't think there was that much ice on the moon.
There's enough, if you know where to look. I rarely come home with less than 200 liters in the tanks. It's more about keeping your own personal iceberg secret. I've lost a few big claims to more underhanded types.
He glanced at his tab.
You'll have to pardon my babbling. Getting a bit late for an old man like myself.
Again, sorry about...
Don't give it a second thought, he said with a shake of his head. Perfectly understandable. You've probably been putting up with it your whole life.
You could say that.
Have that drink on me. Tell Jessica to put it on my tab.
He gestured at the waitress inside the hotel bar. He took Callie's hand and raised it up, giving a quick look for her approval. He kissed just above her knuckles.
Welcome to the moon, Caretaker Washington.
Thanks.
He caught himself 2 steps away.
Oh, he said. By chance, is there someone in your group going to Iran?
Yeah, she said. 2 guys and a girl. Last I saw, they were heading off with the dumb guy for a few drinks.
She pointed down Gletty Boulevard. After half an hour on the patio, she'd recognized some of the stylized carving on the arches as lettering. Gilliman smiled.
Perhaps I'll struggle to stay awake a bit longer and welcome them as well. Good night, my dear.
Good night.
The prospector vaulted gracefully over the patio rail and ambled across the plaza toward the boulevard. He stopped to give her a friendly wave. She waved back.
Let me guess, said a voice to her right. A drink on his tab?
She looked over her shoulder. The waitress kept her eyes on Gilliman as he vanished from the plaza.
Yeah, Callie said. Not the first time he's used that line.
The waitress smirked.
Not even the first time today.
She had the smooth skin and round features of someone who'd spent a lot of time in low gravity.
Just a friendly warning. Don't get too chummy with that one. Sorry?
The waitress nodded out at the plaza.
He offer you a job?
Callie shook her head.
No, why? Ross Gilliman's a charmer, but he's got a habit of screwing people over. Not in the fun way. Probably the most disliked man on the moon. Yeah? He pays off people to do his work for him. Caretakers, surveyors, anyone else who goes outside. They spot something and either grab it for him or tell him where it is. He gives them a couple $100 and he makes a couple thousand. He's the only prospector who spends more time at the bar than in his buggy. He was looking for someone from Iran. Probably lost a contact there when the last bunch of rotations ended.
Jessica shook her head.
Take his free drinks when you can and stay clear of him the rest of the time.
Callie nodded.
In that case, I'll have a rum and Coke. We've only got Pepsi on the moon, hon. That'll be fine.
The waitress slipped away and Callie turned her attention back to the plaza. A couple shuffled by, holding hands and laughing. The Armstrong tree rustled in the breezes of circulating air. Like the slow liquids, it was hypnotic, watching the leaves and thinner branches waft up and down. Almost straight across the courtyard, green all but spilled out of the opening of the southern boulevard, Khonsu, the arboretum. One huge garden on the moon. Supposedly very good psychologically to have a place to go with open space and cathedral ceilings, grass and plants, and even some insects. She hadn't been prepared for so much life. The moon was supposed to be all about death.
The first of everything on the moon gets named Armstrong, that's what my mom always said.
Callie bit back a sigh and looked over her shoulder. The snaggle-toothed woman, Tessa, stood there, clutching a book in both hands. She stared past Callie toward the tree.
Really? It makes sense if you think about it. Armstrong base, Armstrong tree, Armstrong generator. There's probably an Armstrong toilet here somewhere, if we looked around for it.
Callie felt her lips twitch.
Can I sit with you? You can say no if you'd rather be alone.
Thoughts twisted and fought in her mind. In the end, she set the book back down.
Yeah, of course.
Tessa stepped around the table and slid into the spare chair. They looked at each other. The waitress came back with Callie's drink.
Hi there,
she said to Tessa.
Can I get something for you? Just tea, please.
Hot? Tessa gave one sharp nod. The waitress vanished back inside. Silence covered the table again.
So,
Callie said after a few moments,
the trees actually growing on the moon? That's the actual surface of the moon over there? Yes, but it took almost 10 years to get it to grow in the soil. They had to keep pumping in water and liquid nutrients to help the roots. There are even small heating elements buried in the ground to help it make it through the nights.
So you study plants?
No, I just studied everything I could about the moon to prepare. Are you planning to be here for more than one rotation? Yes, hopefully for a lot of them. This is going to be my career.
Being a caretaker?
Yes, I've wanted to do it since I was a little girl. I decided when I was 8.
Callie waited for her to say more. Tessa reached up and removed her pince-nez. She polished the lenses with the edge of a napkin, then clipped the glasses back onto the bridge of her nose. The tea came. Steam swirled up and scattered on a dozen different air currents. Tessa sniffed the small cup, let it sit.
Usually, she said, people have a bunch of follow-up questions when you tell them you've always wanted to be a caretaker. They think it's a weird choice.
Callie shrugged and sipped her own drink. Mixed strong, but she'd made stronger in the past few months.
I'm sure you have your reasons. Yes, I do. I'm guessing you're only here for the one, based on how you asked me. Yeah, I'm doing it for the money.
Tessa's chin bobbed up and down again.
Almost 2/3 of all new caretakers are. Are you studying?
She stretched out one finger to point at Callie's book.
Kind of, just going over a few things. So am I.
Tessa put her hand on her own book.
Environmental subsystems, burial rituals, variant lunar laws.
Callie looked down at her book.
I don't remember any of that from orientation. It's not. I took a lot of the advanced courses, and I've been doing free study on my own. You're really excited about this. Yes, I think it's a wonderful career. We're providing a service and helping people in a time of grief.
Callie had another sip of her drink.
I could help you go over things, if you like. I had all the orientation materials down by my second time through, but I don't mind helping you. You went through the orientation twice? Yes, I wanted to be sure I didn't miss anything. Did you know there are still 17 religions on Earth that prefer burial for the deceased?
Callie looked out at the Armstrong tree.
It must be nice, she said, knowing what you want to do with your life and just doing it.
Tessa tapped her fingers against the back of her own book.
I never thought of it like that. It's just what I always wanted to do.
Callie bit her lip and nodded.
I think I'm going to go for a walk in the Arboretum and call it a night. I could come with you. I've read a few pieces on the species they've grown here. As caretakers, we're allowed to tour the whole area, not just the public sections. Thanks, but I'd rather be alone. Oh, of course,
Tessa looked at her tea, then stood up and pressed the book against her belt buckle.
I'm sorry if I came on too strong. I've been told I don't have the best social skills, but I want us to have a good working relationship at Osiris.
We will, said Callie.
I want to walk alone, that's all.
Tessa let fly with one of her military precise nods. Her mouth pulled into a quick, tight smile, and her oversized tooth slid out between her lips.
Maybe we could meet tomorrow before the caravan arrives. We could have breakfast, if you eat breakfast.
Sure, that'd be nice.
Tessa gave another nod and vanished back into the hotel. Callie let out a sigh. She plucked the straw from her glass and tilted her head back. Two large swallows of rum burned their way down her throat.